Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back to Meeting of the Minds. Today we are here with the world's most dangerous man, the great Ken Shamrock. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
You still got it. See the guns, like the shirt. It's awesome.
Yeah, I try to live my life one way, and that's the way I've always lived it at 100%.
That's it. I love it. So we'll take it from the top. Talk about growing up, your childhood, your upbringing, and how that contributed to your mindset, your perspective, and mental toughness.
Sounds good, man. Let's dive into it.
All right. So what are maybe some of your earliest sports memories or growing up, just in general?
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you think about earlier, because I was in and out of juvenile hall and group homes. I think I started into my juvenile hall stint at 10 years old, and then group homes, taken out of my home at 13, and never lived at home since I was 13. I was always in other placements. So being involved with sports at a young age, I was at different places at different times, but never really long-term in one place. But from my early experiences from, I would say probably from, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, before I actually had been put into placement at 13, in and out of juvenile hall, of course, but in different middle schools and stuff like that. I wrestled and I played Pop Warner at the times that I could play, and I had a natural gift. I know in wrestling, a lot of times I was the only kid that made it to the finals, but I would end up losing in the finals because I didn't have the technique or the skill sets. I would finesse or muscle or just aggressive my way into the finals because at 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, you could get away with a lot of just being a tough kid. But when you got into the finals, you were normally going against somebody who had gone to camps or done certain things, and I would lose. So either one, I would win or I would lose. But most of the time, I would probably lose just because I didn't have the finesse. So, but I was always that kid that had the potential, the natural potential. Even in football, wasn't much on offense. I was more of a defensive player because I didn't have the understanding of rules and didn't have the understanding of having patience to run in the A gap or the B gap. I would run wherever I wanted to and I would hit people. So I would play defense and they would usually put me at linebacker. Early on, people understood that I had this natural ability to find the football and hit people. So I excelled. So fortunately for me, that gave me some sort of acceptance early on in my life, that people wanted to help at different times in my life because of my athletic ability. Teachers and coaches would take a little extra time to make sure that I made the grades in order to be on the football field or the wrestling mat. So it helped me. because I wasn't a good kid, that they wanted to help me because of my personality, that's for sure. But yeah, so I think a lot of that natural ability, of course, that didn't come till later when I really started to refine it, but a lot of my natural ability really kept me in the hunt.
Right. And as you say, natural ability, of course, there's that physical natural ability and also that mental natural ability where you're able to flip that switch. And we always say there's some dogs that naturally bite and there's songs that don't bite, right? Right. So how did you, was Juvenile Hall able to help you channel that a little bit better? Or did you do that outside? How were you able to control it and flip it on at the right time? Because there's no question, to get to your level as an athlete, you don't just get there being a wild man. That might be the beginning, but then there's discipline on top of that.
Yeah, my first experience of learning how to control that was in the group up, the Shamrock Boys Home. Prior to that, a lot of times I would get kicked out of games, just not very structured. And even wrestling mats, I would get in fights. So I wasn't really structured till I got to Shamrock Boys Home. And the Shamrock Boys Home taught me how to actually funnel playing football, because usually I played a lot of street ball and, Pop Warner here and there, but really didn't understand the game because I was never really there long enough to really get the game. And so I remember when I really started to understand was when I was in a football game and we were playing a scrimmage game at Lassen, and I hit this kid. They put me at cornerback because I kept jumping off sides, playing linebacker. So they moved me way back to cornerback and I started learning how to cover receivers, my responsibility, this guy goes this way, this guy goes this way, back in the flat, all these little things, these keys that you would key on. And this kid was coming out in my area. And I remember the ball was in the air and I just remember beeline into the guy that was going to catch it. And I just hit him. And when I hit the ground, I just kept driving my feet because I had so much anger and frustration in me when I let it out. And luckily I hit him when the ball got to him. It wasn't a flag. It was a good hit. And I remember jumping up and the teammates started hitting me on the helmet. And, none of these kids liked me, because I didn't know them. And I was from the Shamrock Boys Home, which was a group home for kids. And we weren't all that accepted at the time because we were always getting in trouble. So I remember these kids started hitting me on the helmet and the pad saying, nice hit. And the coaches were like, yeah, good job. And I remember looking up in the stands, which is to us, the enemy, the parents, right? And they were screaming, yelling, hit him again, kill him. And I'm like, how is that right? Like, that's what I do. These are these grown parents saying the same thing that I would say, like, kill him. And yet it was okay. And I couldn't put my finger on what was happening. Like, this was complete role reversal. And I remember asking Bob Shamrock, how is what I just did right? I said, I had this plastic helmet. I had these plastic pads and I hit this kid with all the intent of putting him in the hospital. He was blowing snot bubbles, literally seeing him blowing snot bubbles after I hit him. And I was only a freshman. And I remember thinking to myself and asking him and going, how is that right? I mean, like, I can't do that on the street. And I get arrested. So now I'm here doing it in front of everyone, with everyone to see, and they're saying it's okay. And he goes, he just looked at me and just kind of chuckled, right? Because if I'm coming from a kid like me, you don't usually get questions like that, right? And so he goes, okay. He said, well, let me explain it to you. He goes, life is very confusing in some points. He said, but this is what you have to remember. You have to remember that whatever you're doing, you need to find what those rules are, whatever you're in. And when you find those rules, you have to stay within those rules to be successful. It may not look right. It may not seem right, but if it's within the rules, it's okay. There's a lot of laws and a lot of different things that we have that are completely confusing because you're literally robbing somebody. But as long as you stay within those parameters, you're not robbing them. And he goes, this is where you need to learn within sports. Life is the same way. It's like if you would have hit him a minute earlier and jumped up and kicked him in the head, say you wouldn't have gotten the same praise, even though maybe it was the same kind of violence you had in your mind, but it was outside the rules. And I remember thinking to myself, I get it. Like, oh, like the light just came on. Like, oh, you mean I can go ahead and do however I want to do on the wrestling mat, torque a guy's head off. As long as they don't tell me to stop, I can keep squeezing. And I can hit a guy as hard as I want with a plastic helmet on, a plastic pads on, as long as it's within the whistle. And I just got it. And then I started transferring that into the world of like, okay, what are the rules in this? Like, if I'm working here, what do I got to do? Like, how do I stay within my rules so as I don't get in trouble? And so it really started to help me understand. Obviously, I got in my trouble because I lost my temper. I was hot-headed. I was an angry kid. So I still got into trouble all the way until I was 47 years old. I'm 56 now, but I got in trouble a long time because I'd always do things outside of what I was supposed to do, and I knew it too. And that was the difference, is I knew it and I was able to pull it back. But it was sports that really helped me understand how I could live in life and be successful.
Absolutely. And then you take that, you start transitioning then into mixed martial arts. And obviously you being one of the main guys, the guy, talk about that a little bit, the discipline that required, the focus. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was exciting to see my first mixed martial arts because I don't think, well, at least I know in the U.S., nobody really ever saw this before. And I remember I was in Mooresville, North Carolina, and I was doing some pro wrestling at Nelson Royals wrestling school. And I was traveling around the area down there, and I did a couple of tough mans, and I won a couple of tough mans down there. And so I was just starting to get into my professional career, which is wrestling. And then I saw this tape from Japan, because I went over to Japan and worked at Baba's group early in my career in wrestling. And so when I saw one of my friends who had been working over in Japan, Dean Malenko, showed me this tape of these guys wrestling. It was a pro wrestling event, right? I remember watching this thing and it looked nothing like pro wrestling. It looked like a shoot or a real fight. And they were punching each other open hand. They were kicking each other, kneeing each other, throwing each other. And then when they hit the ground, they started doing all these joint manipulations in and out of these moves and stuff. And I was just like locked in on the screen going, in my mind going, that is unbelievable. But like, how do you do that? Like, here I was a fighter. I mean, a street fighter, a brutal guy. And I'd never seen anything like this. And I'm like, I want to do that. And I remember Dean says, well, yeah, but man, it's real. I mean, it's a real deployment. I mean, the ending's kind of worked out, but these guys are hitting and kicking it. I says, yeah, I want to do it. And so I remember went down to Florida and did a tryout down there. And of course, everything I did down there was a shoot. It was real. Put me through a tryout. I fought all the guys down there. I ended up thumping them all because I had a background, right? I mean, I was a tough kid and wrestling background. I was a street fighter. And so I just put that together and just started thumping everybody. And I felt pretty good about myself. And then they put me up in Japan a couple months later. I don't remember how long it was, but went up to Japan again to try out there again. And the first two guys I thumped, young guys, and I was feeling pretty cocky. And then these two guys walked in that I saw on the videotape, and it was Masa Funaki and Minoru Suzuki. And I remember looking at those guys, they walked in and I was like, well, those are the two guys I saw on the tape. And Akira, I was with these other two guys. And at the time I didn't know, but they were young boys. They were just beginners. And so then I remember Sammy, who was the guy that brought me up there, screams at him and say, hey, you guys want to get some time on the mat? And of course they both looked over and said, yeah. And the guy was a big kid. I mean, I probably went about 220 at the time, 217, 220, pretty big kid. And so they were like, yeah. And Funaki probably went about 220, about the same size, 215, but he was an inch taller than me. And Minoru Suzuki was this little scrawny kid. He's 185 pounds, maybe 5'10", 5'9", 5'10". And so he was going to come in and I remember he goes, okay, come on in. And Suzuki was the first one in there. And I was like, I'm going to squash this guy. And, I remember, shooting on him and, I remember Sammy going, "You okay?" And I'm looking at him, "What are you talking about?" I mean, he literally choked me out. I was like, he's going, "You okay?" And I'm, "What are you talking about?" Like, and I knew something had happened because I couldn't remember why I was on the stone on the ground. This guy's standing up. And he literally just choked me out when I shot in on him. He just got my back and choked me. So we went at it again. He armbarred me, he'll hook me. And I remember he's putting them on. Now you got to remember, this is a time where nobody knew what a tap out was. Like, we didn't know. So he's putting it on and I'm like, I mean, it's hurting and you can tell it's hurting, but I'm not screaming or anything like that. I'm fighting to get out of it. So Sammy goes, no, tap. And I still don't know what he's saying to me. And so I keep fighting. Luckily, Suzuki didn't break my leg because he could have, or my arm, because I didn't tap and I kept fighting and he kept holding and eventually he let it go. Sammy goes, "Listen, if he gets you, tap." And I didn't understand what he was saying to me. Like, tap what? And he pulled me aside. He goes, "Listen, if you get into a move, you can't get out and it hurts, just tap him or the mat, mostly him, so he knows you're tapping." I was like, "Oh, okay." And in my mind, I was like, that's like giving up. And so he would get me again and I would tap. And Sammy goes, "You need to tap." And he says, "Just practice." Of course, I didn't get that, right? It's just like, to me, it was giving up. But he just beat the crap out of me for 30 minutes. And I'd already, wrestled these other guys, and I thought I was it. Well, I got him, and man. And then he says, "Hey, you still ready to go some more?" And, of course, I'm thinking I'm disappointed. I want to go more. I want to go again. So he brings in Funaki. Now, Funaki's bigger. Same thing. He just stomped me, beat me up. And I just kept thinking to myself, I screwed up. Like, there's no way they're going to invite me. So I ended up going back and they were saying, "No, you did a good job." You know how people do, like, tap on your back, giving you sympathy. "Oh, you did good. You did." That's how I felt. Like, yeah, whatever. But in their minds, I did, because I wouldn't give up. And I kept coming after them, even though they were doing it and I wouldn't tap. And even though that's not smart, but they saw that toughness and they said, "We can train this guy." And so I went back to Mooresville and with my head down, thinking I messed up. And I got a call later on and asking if I wanted to come up and fight on their next show. Well, I was like, yeah. But then I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, as he's talking, I'm going, man, I ain't ready. And he goes, "How'd you like to come to Japan for a couple of weeks before we put you in there and you can train up here?" And I was like, yes. And of course, that didn't go well with the family because I was going to be gone for a while. And but I felt like if I was going to do this, I had to commit to it. Like I had to commit to this. And it was something I loved, even though I got beat up and all that. I was so like into it, like how they did it, the leg locks, the arm bar, the jokes, how they said, I was so into that. Like I wanted to learn it. And I remember going up to the gym, the dojo, and I spent all my time there. I was last one in, first one in, last one out. I mean, I was so into it. And I remember I picked up the heel hook. It was the first thing I learned. And I went into my first match and I won my first match. And it was in front of 17,000 people. Like, you imagine that, going into your first match. And they had to teach me, like, listen, this is not a real fight, but it is between the finish. Like, you're going to get hit. You're going to get kicked. You're going to get thrown. You have to fight back. They're not going to try to knock you out, but they're going to hit you. And it was as physical as you could get. It was like being in a sparring match when you're getting somebody ready for a fight. That's what it was like. You're not trying to hurt them, but you're gonna hit them. You're gonna let them know you're there. And a couple times, because it's hard to control, a couple times they do hit you hard, and if you're not ready for it, you're gonna get knocked out. So I went into my first one and I won my first match, and it was exciting. People popping, cheering my name, which means that I had done well. And I didn't know the talent that I had, because I kept thinking I screwed up when I got beat up so bad, but they saw it in me that I had what it took. And I remember from that time they started to train me. And then of course I end up fighting not Don Nakanielsen in my very first real fight, even though it was in Fujiwara Gumi's organization. But we had done a specials match, me and Takahashi. In the dome, where we were the only two that actually did a real fight. And I remember breaking this guy, just snapping this, just kick Muay Thai boxer, world champion, just taking his arm and twisting it behind his ear. And he's screaming and yelling. And he didn't know how to tap either. No one told him, hey, you got to tap. He had boxing gloves on. And so ended up winning that one. And from that point on, I was like, I'm in, I'm going to do this. And of course, then the pancreas came up.
Absolutely. Talk, Talk about now how you developed mentally as a fighter in terms of preparation, because again, you're competing in front of thousands of people, eventually millions. So you know all eyes are on you. What are maybe some of the mental mistakes you made early in your career, or maybe things you focused on the wrong way that you learned and developed as you went on?
Yeah, I would say, I think right away, I was different than I think most fighters, because I don't think anybody really had that understanding of what it was to be a professional in MMA or in no holds barred. There was just, I was the first one that literally started a team and started training as a unit and then started breaking down film. So I would never say, especially early in my career when I was successful, because there wasn't a time when I stepped in the ring that I wasn't successful. Like early on, I went from the beginning to the top in a matter of 6 months. So my transition to this, because it was so young and so new, that there weren't a whole lot of people besides people in Japan and maybe the Gracies that had an understanding of what it is, right? And so for me, when I jumped in there, I started out so fast, and I started learning because I stayed in Japan and I started working at the dojo and I was there 24/7. And I learned so much early on that I think that I had the mindset early on at being very professional, going into fights, knowing what guys were doing. And the hard part is, especially in those earlier days where there were no film on anybody fighting MMA or no holds barred. So basically what we had to do is look at guys and find out what it is they did before that. Were they jiu-jitsu players? Were they wrestlers? Whatever they were. And then you just break down film on it and see what it is that they did, know what they were doing. And a lot of times you would get alternates in there. So you didn't even know who you were going to fight going in. So really with me, we did what we called the Lion's Den tryouts. And I felt like having the conditioning, having the mental toughness going into these kind of fights were what you needed to be prepared to go in and fight in this type of event. Because as far as skill sets and people having video to break down on their particular fights, wasn't there. And so it was really just knowing who they were, what background they were coming from. And then in the gym, training like you were fighting in no holds barred, bare knuckle, get on the mat and you start going at one another, and you don't go like hitting them hard, but you hit them. Kind of like what I did in Japan in the earlier days with Fujiwara Gumi and with UWF, where you were hitting guys, but you weren't trying to knock them out. So that's kind of how we practiced going into no holds barred. So that guys had an understanding of what it would feel like, what would work, what wouldn't work going into these particular fights. So for me, I thought from the beginning that I stepped in, I was always prepared. Now, it wasn't till, later on after I started getting a lot of success that, I started slipping a little bit. I started feeling myself a little bit. And then that's where it got me beat by Hoist, because it almost felt like there was nobody in the world that could beat me, because I was fighting guys from everybody in the world and had no idea what the Gracies were. So, I think that if I was looking at it, I would say one of the times that I came in unprepared was when I went in against Gracie, because I didn't think anything of the gi. I didn't understand it, didn't care to. I just thought they were guys walking around with pajamas on and that they were strutting their black belts around like that was some sort of trophy. And that, your trophy to me was actually going in there and being a ranked number one in the world by fighting people. You don't have to wear a belt to do that. And so to me, that's kind of my thought process. And then I went in and got choked by it. So, I would say, my study habits were really good early on. I always tried to find out who I was fighting. And if I didn't know, my training itself, was harder than anything anybody else was doing. And I felt like those were the credentials you needed to win and be successful. And it showed it even my training with the other fighters. So, we were excited about that. But the biggest letdown, the first one, I truly believe was against Hoist Gracie, when I didn't understand it and I didn't give him any credit or any thought of him being good.
Yeah, makes sense. And how do you balance taking it personal? Because all great athletes take it personal, but at the same time, you can't get overly attached to the outcome and make like an identity meaning about yourself just based on if you lose or if you make that mistake. How do you balance that?
Well, it's hard because, you know, when I was very successful early on and learned very quickly, and then to jump into my home country and then get beat by someone that was only about 10 pounds lighter than I was. I think I was a little under 200 pounds. I think he was about 180. And I listened to him at 160, 165. But I think if you see him stand in the ring with me, his shoulders are bigger than mine. He's an inch taller than me. So, but he was lighter. I think he was like 10 pounds lighter than me. But to get beat like that after having all that success, and it was on me, because if you saw the second fight, it was a much different fight. I mean, it was definitely much different. And it was because I understood a little bit. I go, okay, you idiot, go learn it, because, you know, there are people out there that have different styles that you don't know. And so then my mind changed to going, okay, you know, we need to study more. We need to make sure that we have an understanding of everything everybody's doing. And so that's why I broadened my horizon, bringing different people into the gym, learning different styles, different type of attacks and defenses, bringing in kickboxers, bringing in boxers, karate guys, just all kinds of different styles to just broaden the horizon on making sure that we understood things that were effective. And I think by losing a voice, I think that really broadened my perspective, but it also gave me a hunger, a desire. And I didn't want anybody else. You know, I remember I made it into the finals and I was going to fight Harold Howard, I think it was. And I knew I could beat him. I mean, there's no question I could destroy the guy, but I wasn't there for that. Like, I wasn't there for the money. You know, I wasn't there to capture a title. I was there because Royce Gracie beat me. And when I lost that opportunity, and I know a lot of people, except for guys that are in my position that have been very successful and they have money, understand that going in to fight somebody that you know you could beat is really irrelevant, because the only thing that matters at that point in time in your career, because you've already done everything, right, is winning that tournament wasn't something that was that exciting to me. It was Royce Gracie that took precedence. And I knew that if I went in and won that tournament, that getting Royce again would be hard. I just knew that for us to be able to meet again into the finals would be very difficult. That if I won the tournament, then going into the next one, I would probably have every bracket that I was going to fight would have the toughest guy. And then I might make it into the finals. And then, of course, I would have a broken hand or I would be exhausted, which is no big deal because you got to fight anyways, which I always did. And I remember thinking to myself, it's never going to be an opportunity for me to get him in a fair spot, because obviously they ran the organization. So they were able to matchmake and do all the things they needed to. But now that they knew me, now they knew who I was, I knew that opportunity wasn't going to be there anymore. And so I wanted to make sure that I could get Royce Gracie. And I felt like I put so much pressure on them by stepping out and saying, I want Royce. I don't care about this. I don't care about anything but Royce. I knew that everything would focus on getting that fight, and it did.
That's awesome. And then talk about when guys are talking a lot of trash, going back and forth, and now you see it keeps snowballing, right? And of course, people are saying things that are personal, and it's hard for it to not get under our skin. How do we control ourselves? What are some things that you've learned over time? Maybe certain things you may overreact to when you realize, okay, I don't care about this. I'm focusing on that. Talk about that a little bit, because now athletes are dealing with that constantly.
Yeah, I think the first thing that you have to do, and I think it's really important, is to be real. Like, you have to be real. Is it true? And if it's true, fix it. Don't get angry about it. Fix it, right? But if it's not true, what does it matter? Like, who are they? If you respond to it, then it makes it true. Then it makes people go, wait a minute, is that true? Like, why is he getting so? So, yeah, I would think when you're dealing with people who are saying things about you that are disrespectful, I've always tried to, and a lot of different, and sometimes you can't, but I always try to respond to them like, why do you feel this way? Or why are you saying that? And make them give me an explanation. But if they come back and said, cuz, I just think you're that, then you just like, okay, well, I guess we just disagree with one another. You have your perspective. I have mine. And just leave it at that. And of course, they're going to keep coming at you. But sometimes I'll get people when I say, well, why do you think that? And they'll come back and they'll say this. And I said, well, how is that right when I did this, this, and this? And then they were like, yeah, but you didn't do this, this, and this. And then I would say, yeah, but I did do that, this, and this. This is what you're not seeing. And sometimes you'll get them to go, okay, I see. Yeah, maybe. Or sometimes we'll just disagree. And that's okay. But most of the time, the majority of the time, you're just going to have to just disagree, because a lot of them are doing it just because they're angry and they don't like you for whatever reason. And you're not going to change their mind. But it doesn't have any bearing on what you have to do, what you got to go out and do. And so getting mad about it is a waste of energy. There's nothing that's going to make that any good at all. All it's going to do is show a weakness. And it's going to show a side of you that a lot of people don't want to see. So try to always show that side to where you're more of a thinker and you want to know reasons why. And if you can't get that to happen, then you just don't say anything at all that way, because otherwise it's just going to be a bashing.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Another question I always wanted to ask about your mindset is that when you were competing, it didn't matter what size the guy was. We see a lot of athletes now, they're complaining, you're weighing in at the same weight, and you're like, oh, this guy feels big. Well, the guy actually is big that you're competing against. Talk about your mindset going into that and not caring about that, or how did you focus?
Well, for me, I think it was easy, because even in high school, I think I weighed 160. My biggest, I was 167 pounds. And then my end of my senior year, I was 170. So my senior year, I would wrestle in state, which is California. I wrestled 185s, weighing 170, 165 pounds. But out of state, because Nevada is right on the border there, we would do a lot of our off season. We would do a lot of tournaments in Nevada. And there was two Nevada state champions. There was one at 190, whatever their weight classes. It was 175 and then 190, 180, something like that. So I wrestled both those weight classes. In one of those classes, when I went up to Douglas at the tournament in Douglas in Nevada, there was a state champion up there. And his name was, I forget his name. He was from his name was Lomery from Urington. And he was 190 pound state champion, like 2 years in a row. He was a senior year. He'd been unbeaten. And I met him in the finals and I ended up beating him, and I'd been undefeated also. So, and I was only 170 pounds. So I was wrestling him at 190. And then we had a rotary tournament, which was in Susanville, where there was the Northern California and then there was Nevada. And they all came to our tournament. And there was another guy there that was named was McCann. And he was 175 or 180, 175, 190, so 185 at the rotary tournament in California. So in the division we had at 190, the guy I had beat was wrestling the heavyweight, which is what it was in California. But in this, because they had a 175 pounder in Nevada, he was wrestling the 185 pounder, which is where I wrestled at from 170. So I ended up wrestling him in the finals. And I remember I was down 3-0 in overtime, I tied it up 6-6 and I ended up beating him 9-6 in overtime. So it was something that I was normal, right? I mean, I always wrestled up. And the reason why was because at weighing at 170 pounds, but when I did the bench press contest, I was 160 pounds when I did this. It was the beginning of the year before the year started. I remember putting on the 320 pounds and I benched it at 160 pounds. And this was the summer before school had started, because we were trying to raise money for football and the athletic department. So we put on this bench press contest, and then you would go around and have people put so much money on every pound lifted over your body weight. And so I went out and got a bunch of people to pay, like, I don't know how, $5, $10, a dollar, whatever you wanted to do for what I would lift over my body weight. And of course, I'm walking around 160 pounds. People go, oh yeah, we'll do that. He'll, you know, maybe a couple pounds over. I benched 320 So it ended up doing pretty well, but because I was so strong, right, and I moved so fast, that when I wrestled heavyweight, I was stronger than those guys. I was a little bit lighter in the pants, but when they would throw me around, I was like a cat. I'd land on my feet, shoot back in, and if I got a hold of them, I could pick them up and dump them. So it worked out really well. And then again, I went against two Nevada state champions at two different weight classes and beat both of them. And so I felt really good. It was always something I was used to, just guys bigger. I just felt better fighting bigger guys. And so even as I moved up into my adulthood and I started into the MMA world, there was no weight classes. Even when I was in Pancras, when we were fighting there's no weight class, but it wasn't abnormal to me. Like, it just was something that I grew up with. So when someone came in and they were 50 pounds heavier than me, it was no big deal. It's fine. I didn't care. Because I knew that there was nobody stronger than me. I don't care what weight they were. I was always really strong. And when I got an adult, this is something people can look up. I weighed 225 pounds and I benched 605. That's incredibly strong. And I benched in a bench press contest. I benched 585, where you come down, touch, and then come up. So I just always been really strong. And I think in my MMA career, people that had wrestled me early on, later on, when they put weight divisions in there and then I had to drop weight, I lost a lot of that strength trying to cut weight and stuff. So, but if you talk to guys that I work with over in Japan and in the earlier UFCs, it's one thing. Even Kimo said, man, he's so thick and strong because he was 20, 30 pounds bigger than me and had more muscle mass, but I was able to move him pretty easy. And so it was something that I grew up with. Weight difference didn't matter to me. In fact, I prefer it fighting bigger guys than guys that could move as fast as I could. I preferred the bigger and slower guys.
That makes sense, because you're thinking about ultimately being the best. You're not thinking pound for pound. Pound for pound ultimately is theoretical.
Right, right. And I didn't care. I mean, to me, I thought open division because, and I get it. You get a guy like Pat Miletich, who, in my opinion, was really good. Him and a few other guys I thought that were really good. But because they were so light, let's face it, it does make a difference when you're that light. It does. I know he went against Dan Severn, and went to a draw, which is incredible, but Dan wasn't dangerous. Dan was a guy that could wrestle well. He couldn't punch, but he could wrestle well. So if he went up against a guy like Mark Coleman or somebody like myself, I mean, that's a little bit different. I mean, it would be the same for me if I was at his weight. It's just dangerous, right? Because those are some heavy hands. That you're going to get hit with. And the weight difference starts to make that difference. So I get that. But for me, I was at a great weight. You know, I was around 217. I could go up to 225 if I wanted to. Natural weight, 217, as I was moving in my career. When I got to cutting weight, it was much lower than that. I had to stay a little bit lighter to make the 205 an easier cut. But yeah, so for that, I think that the no weight divisions, I loved it because, like you said, you want to be the best. You want to be the best. You don't care who it is or what weight it is. You want to be able to prove it.
Right. And of course, we do understand the whole weight class thing, but it's just the mindset that I'll take on anyone. You need to have that mindset to be successful, even within a weight class.
Yep. And I think that you got some guys out there that are willing to do that. I think Conor McGregor is one. He'll fight anybody, you know, and that, to me, that's a testament of guys that I think would do well in the MMA that I fought in, the no holds barred. There are some guys that are a little bit more tapered to making sure that guys make weight. And if you miss by a pound and, you know, those are guys that wouldn't survive in the world that I came up in. And there's very few. The reason why I know this is because when we first did it, nobody, when it was bare knuckle and no rules, you had a lot of tough guys out there in different sports. None of them would touch it. None of them would come close to it. And that tells you in itself right there that it's a different breed of people that will step in with no rules, no time limit, and fight knowing that you get your head kicked in.
That's awesome. great stuff that guys actually now hear that, hear coming from your mouth, that's the mentality they need to adopt now, even if those aren't the constraints right now. That's awesome. Last question I have for you, just generally about, everyone talks about the importance of purpose, knowing your why and what you tell yourself on a regular basis. What was that like while you were competing, now as a person, that just motivates you in sports and life?
Yeah, I think from the time I started till today, my why is the same as it's always been. And it's been the where I came from. We talked a little bit about it. I don't want to go back there. And I think that the minute, it may be not true, but in my mindset, it keeps me living and going in the direction that I need to go. But I feel like the day that I stop is the day that I open the door to going back to where I came from and with nothing. And so I feel like, you know, I'm going to just keep going and keep trying to challenge myself because I don't want to go to that place where there was nothing to fight for. There was nothing in the future. And you could be the most successful person in the world and still have that feeling like, okay, what do I do today? You know, because you have everything, you've done everything. What are you going to do now? And you could still be in that same mindset from where you first started, where you had nothing. There was nothing to fight for because you had nothing. But you can all have everything and then not have anything to fight for. So you have nothing. And you could get bored. You could start doing things you shouldn't be doing. So I just feel like, man, my why is to always keep challenging myself so I don't get to the point to where I'm unhappy, to where it's not exciting to be living life every day, to get up every morning and look in and see, okay, what am I going to challenge myself today on? Where am I going to go today? And to keep pushing. And I would say the reason, my reasonings and my goals, even though I've done everything, but now it's more about, it's more about me helping. Like, here's my quote. I believe that we have all been put on this earth to try to be successful, to get to where you want to go, be successful. And you have to take care of you first. Once you've done that, then I believe that it's everybody's responsibility. I'm not just you, me, or anybody. It's everybody's responsibility to turn around and help as many people as you can to achieve the same kind of success. Give them opportunities to be able to reach the goals that they're looking, because you've been there and done that. And that's my why. That's my goal. That's my reason that I'm doing things now and staying in the competitive mode now, is because I don't want to lose that power that I've been given from my success to help other people achieve their success, because nobody will listen to you if you're just sitting on the stool enjoying life and not creating anything more than just what you've already done, because it'll get old. So keep driving, keep trying to be more successful, and then teach other people how to do the same thing. And my kids, you know, I'm actually going to be doing a podcast with my son, talking about what it's like to be a father and what it's like to be a son that has a famous father, and the struggles and the good things, the bad things, the expectations, all the things that go with that kind of relationship. So that's another part of me going, I'm going to show my son how he can help people, how he can reach out and turn other people and be successful, because he's already been through something that would help other people. And at the same time, now we're reaching out to all those other people out there that are struggling in life with a relationship with the family member. And so this is what I do. These are things that I'm doing. But if I'm not successful and I don't keep driving to continue to be successful, then none of this stuff is going to be as powerful as it would if I am.
Makes a lot of sense. Awesome stuff, Ken. I really appreciate it. I guess this is the last question. How do we send more people your way? You spoke about your podcast, your son, if he has a podcast, how do we push him your way?
Yeah, KenShamrock.com. That's my website. I've got all my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it, everything on there. You want to stay in touch with what we are doing, especially the podcast. You can find it on there, the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. Also, too, Valor BK. That's the league that we had started in 2020. Unfortunately, the flu virus or the Kung Flu virus got us all. So we are holding off until we can get a fan base, whether it's through the social media or live, but we're building that platform now. So when we go again, fans have always been important to me. So I want to make sure that we can reach as many as we can when we put these events on, because I think that to me, that's the future, pure fighting. So yeah. So if you want to get a hold of us and you want to follow us and stay in tune, valorbk.com. And, with all the personal things that I got going on, podcasts, events, all the things that we have upcoming and calendar, you can go to kenshamrock.com.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Ken. I really appreciate it. We'll throw all the link to all those in the show notes. So make sure we got them in there. Thank you again. The world's most dangerous man. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.